Welcome to another edition of Mormonland. I'm Dave Noyce, and I oversee our faith coverage. I'm joined again by senior religion reporter Peggy Fletcher Stack. Hi, Peggy.
Hi, Dave.
Well, as the United States churns toward Election Day, both presidential candidates are courting members of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, especially in the western swing states of Arizona and Nevada. There are Latter-day Saints for Trump and Latter-day Saints for Biden. But what do the candidates themselves really think about Mormons in particular and religion in general? And how much sway do Latter-day Saints really have? Joining us via Zoom to talk about the race, the issues that matter to Latter-day Saints, and how they seem to be playing out in the two campaigns is McKay Coppins, a staff writer for The Atlantic and a BYU alum. McKay, welcome back to Mormonland.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you here. So you've written a great deal about Donald Trump. When did you first meet and write about him? And how did that conversation go?
I have known Donald Trump for, 6 years now. In 2014, early 2014, I arranged to profile him when he was, at the time, making noise about possibly running for governor of New York. And then kind of in the midst of talking about that, also floating the idea that he might run for president. So I thought he was kind of just like an interesting character. My determination was that this was kind of a publicity stunt. He had flirted with running for office many, many times over the course of his career. But anyway, he was up in New Hampshire giving a speech. So I arranged to go cover the speech and then get on his airplane after and fly back to New York. And the idea was that I would interview him on the flight back to New York. And I'll spare you the long story, but basically there was a fluke blizzard in Manhattan, which prompted his pilot to inform him that LaGuardia was shutting down, which then prompted Donald Trump to decide to reroute the plane to Palm Beach, where he has his big, you know, sprawling compound, Mar-a-Lago. And when somebody asked him in the car as he was making this call, right as we were getting up to the tarmac where his plane was, that, you know, we have this reporter here, what do you want us to do with him? Trump said, oh, just bring him along. So I ended up spending 2 days at Mar-a-Lago, kind of marooned there with Donald Trump, and spent a lot of time talking to him and interviewing him throughout that process, and wrote a kind of 6,000-word piece about my misadventure with Donald Trump that he, I guess suffice it to say, did not appreciate what I wrote. And it has kind of shaped my relationship with him ever since.
So moving from that inauspicious beginning, you have a recent piece in The Atlantic. You noted that in private, Donald Trump mocks Mormons and other Christian supporters, even evangelicals, perhaps his most solid supporters. What kind of things did he say, especially about Latter-day Saints? And what was the reaction to that article? I'm sure many of our listeners read it or have heard about it, but maybe you could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So, well, it's funny because the kind of roots of this story actually go back to that meeting at Mar-a-Lago that I had with him, that trip to Mar-a-Lago, because when we were there, we had this interesting moment, and I talked to him a bunch throughout that trip, but there was one moment where he was kind of giving me his theory for why Mitt Romney had lost the 2012 presidential race. And the whole thing was about Mitt Romney's religion in Donald Trump's mind. He was saying, you know, people don't get the Mormon thing, that it's kind of seen as this exotic faith. And, you know, that's what sunk him. That's what killed his candidacy. And I had this moment when I could kind of tell where he was headed in the conversation. I felt like he was about to say some things about Mormonism or Mormons. You know, he's a very candid and rude guy, frankly, when you're with him. Also, you know, very entertaining and charming. But like in that moment, I felt like I could tell where the conversation was going. And I had this like moment that I actually always have always regretted, where I cut him off and told him that I was Mormon. And I think it was just out of like a human sense of politeness. Like, I didn't want him to get caught making these comments and then realize I was Mormon. So I told him that. And of course, he immediately like pivoted 180 degrees had started talking about, oh, I love the Mormons. The Mormons are great, you know? And I've always wondered for the 6 years since then, what would have happened if I hadn't told him that? And basically fast forward to a few weeks ago, I was talking to my editors about, possible stories to do before the election was over. And I brought up we talked about kind of this mystery of Donald Trump obviously has had a lot of success in courting conservative religious voters, right? Mormons, evangelicals, conservative Jews, conservative Catholics. And he's very vocal about, how I am the champion of religious people. And that rhetoric is laced throughout his speeches and interviews. And so the question that kind of came up with my editors was, well, what does he say about religious people behind the scenes? We know he's not really religious. And so I brought up this experience. And anyway, I started to report it out. So I started talking to former aides and employees and people who have known Donald Trump over the course of his life. And Michael Cohen, his longtime personal attorney and kind of fixer and confidant, who had a falling out with him a couple of years ago and has since written a memoir kind of about his time working for Donald Trump. I got him on the phone and I started to ask him about, various things related to how Trump talked about religion. And he told me a lot of interesting stories about how he talked about conservative evangelicals and religious right leaders who he supported. But when I brought up the Mormon thing, I told Michael Cohen that story about my experience with Mar-a-Lago, and he just started laughing. And he's like, oh man, he used to make fun of Mitt Romney's religion all the time. And especially when he found out about the religious undergarments worn by many Latter-day Saints. He said Donald Trump wouldn't drop it. His quote was, how many times did he bring up Mitt Romney and the undergarments? Like, this is just something that Trump found funny. He's very, anyone who's watched him knows that he's very good at kind of identifying points that he can criticize or make fun of in his opponents. Obviously, he has this very bad relationship with Mitt Romney. And this was just one of those things that he would make fun of and mock all the time in private.
So what was the reaction to your article?
Yeah, so it's pretty interesting. Because my article covers all different kinds of religious groups and what Trump says about it, there were kind of these isolated reactions in different spheres of like the internet, right? So there was this whole conversation that the story spawned among conservative evangelicals and on kind of evangelical blogs and websites and, Twitter and stuff. And then there was this separate one taking place among Mormons. I saw a lot of different reactions. With any kind of story in this climate, there's a certain segment of the population that will immediately reject it, right? So, and if you're a Latter-day Saint who's extremely supportive of Donald Trump, you don't want to believe this, you don't want to accept it, and you just immediately kind of cry fake news. Then there's a certain segment of Latter-day Saints who are Democrats and or just avowed Trump opponents, and they immediately kind of had it blow up. Latter-day Saints for Biden and Harris like turned it into a video, like an ad, and issued a statement. And I saw, Biden campaign officials, kind of promoted it and weighed in on it. But then there was, I should mention one of the reactions that that I saw just recently actually was from Robert O'Brien, who is the White House National Security Advisor and is also a Latter-day Saint. And he, in an interview in Utah before the vice presidential debate, was asked about my story and, said, well, if he didn't like Latter-day Saints, he wouldn't have appointed me, and kind of tried to dismiss the reporting. So anyway, there was a lot of reactions like that. But what I did find interesting and what I tried to note when I kind of engaged with the reaction was that, the White House was given a chance to respond to all the details in my story. Like I got on the phone with the White House deputy press secretary the night before the story ran and walked him through everything in the story, told him every anecdote, every detail. And he didn't deny any of it, didn't dispute any of it. And in fact, he gave me a statement that I put in the piece saying that Donald Trump is known for his terrific sense of humor. So the implication being that, you know, oh, he's joking around, like this is, you know, this is what we love about Donald Trump. So I do think that I tried to note that when people were kind of rejecting it, you know, saying this is untrue, that nobody's actually saying it's untrue. Why the White House, Donald Trump's spokesman isn't saying it's untrue. They're just saying we shouldn't care about it. And I'll leave it up to readers to decide whether they want to care about it or whether they think it's okay. But I don't think you can just reject that it ever happened.
Yeah, when I read that part of the story, I was almost surprised that the White House went there and said, talked about his sense of humor, because it doesn't confirm particulars, but it sort of helps confirm that type sort of thing could have or maybe did happen, those types of comments. Yeah, that was interesting.
Yeah, well, as a journalist, I mean, you guys know, right? Like when you get a response like that, it's more notable for what it doesn't say than what it does, right? If that statement had come back and said, look, I ran this by the president or the chief of staff or whatever, and these three details in your story are false, that happens quite a bit in my reporting. And when it does happen, you have to weigh how solid is your source for it. If they're denying it on the record and your source is on background, often that means you either get rid of the detail or you acknowledge that it's in dispute, right? Like that's just part of reporting. But the fact that they didn't say anything like that and just kind of went to the sense of humor thing does sort of suggest that, you know, no one in Trump's orbit who interacted with this story necessarily found it implausible or unrealistic.
Okay, so let's turn to Biden. You know, throughout his political career, Joe Biden has been viewed as a religious person himself. Why do you think more Latter-day Saints don't view him that way?
Part of it is just, you know, partisanship, or actually negative partisanship, right? That's the term that political scientists tend to use the most, that people are actually the animating force in American politics for the last, you know, decade or so, probably more, is not even loyalty to your own side, as it were, but it's kind of hatred of the other side, right? So if you are a very religious and very conservative person who has kind of identified fully as a partisan Republican, you have kind of been conditioned to believe that Democrats are the anti-religion party, and that Joe Biden, therefore, is an anti-religion candidate. Even if you kind of know, and I've had conversations with religious conservatives who will grant that, you know, Joe Biden, maybe he does go to church and maybe he prays, but that, you know, he believes in abortion rights and you know, the numerous other things, and therefore isn't truly religious. Or it doesn't really matter what his religion is, because he's out of step on these policy issues. So there's a lot of that. But actually, what I think is interesting is the extent to which Joe Biden has succeeded where Hillary Clinton failed in picking off a lot of those religious voters that Trump had, right? So there was, I think it was Pew or Gallup just recently put out some information about white Christians who are defecting from Trump, right? That he's still winning that demographic group, but not at nearly the same margins that he did in 2016. Latter-day Saint voters, the polling I've seen, and Peggy, you're probably better versed in this, but my sense is that Trump has more or less held the voters that he got in 2016 among Latter-day Saints, maybe built a little bit on that, but it's hard to tell with the different polls. A lot of the Mormons who didn't vote for Trump but voted for someone like Evan McMullen or Gary Johnson, at least some of those have gone to Biden this time. He's kind of managed to consolidate some of that never Trump Mormon support in a way that Hillary Clinton wasn't able to. So it does actually seem like Joe Biden has succeeded to a certain extent, but the kind of lure of negative partisanship is so hard to break. I talked to Quinn Monson, who I know you talked to before at Brigham Young University. He's a pollster and a political scientist. And he says for a lot of Latter-day Saints in the Trump era, they are they're in tension. They're kind of dealing with this tension of being lifelong Republicans and being lifelong Mormons. And for the first time in their whole political lives, they feel like those things are in tension. And I think that that's true with a lot of different voters of faith. There are, you know, conservative Catholics and conservative Jews and conservative evangelicals who are feeling that tension between their religious values and their loyalty to the Republican Party that they didn't feel like they quite had to grapple with, in the Bush years, for example, or when Mitt Romney was the standard bearer of the party. It's a different experience, and people are reacting to it in different ways.
So there's a recent piece in the New York Times saying that Mormon women could make the difference for Biden in Arizona. What did you think about that article, or at least that case? Do you think that's overblown?
I don't know how overblown it is. I mean, I think saying any one group will be the thing, the death knell for Donald Trump. I think we reached our quota for those stories a long time ago. But I do think that Liz Mayer, the person who wrote that, she's a longtime Republican strategist and kind of a never Trump, libertarian leaning woman. Who has some personal experience with Mormons and kind of understands Mormonism. I think she is onto something. Arizona in particular has a lot of Latter-day Saint voters, and that is a very closely contested state. It was in 2016 and 2020, it's much more so. That if you talk to Democrats, they identify Arizona as one of those states that used to be reliably red that they think they can turn purple for now, and in the long run, they can just flip it to a blue state. And that, so the Mormon, any vote, any voter group in Arizona matters, and the Mormon vote matters a lot. And Mormon women are really where you're seeing most of the defections from Trump. It's, you know, Mormon men, like men across all demographic groups, are much more, willing to support Trump, excited about Trump, enthusiastic about Trump, or at least willing to kind of hold their nose and vote for him. Women have been defecting. And so I do think there's something to that. And my experience is anecdotal, but I will say, like, as a Latter-day Saint who talks to a lot of Mormon women, who's married to a Mormon woman, it is my sense that a lot of Mormon women, and I'm not talking about kind of Democrats or, you know, left-wing people here, Mormon women who identify themselves often as pro-life or who voted for Mitt Romney, voted for George W. Bush. There's a lot about Donald Trump that just kind of repels them. And a lot of it is his character. It's the way he talks about women. It's the vulgarity. It's also issues like immigration and refugees, which are big issues for members of the church. And Donald Trump, as is pretty far out of step of kind of the mainstream Mormon consensus on those issues. So I'm not that surprised that Mormon women are kind of rejecting Trump at the numbers that they are. And I do think they could make a difference in Arizona. I'm curious. I know this isn't my podcast. I shouldn't be asking questions, but what did you think of that, Peggy? You're tapped into this world. Like, what did you think of that argument?
Well, I did think it was a little overblown, but I don't know Arizona like you do. I would say my observations are similar to yours in that Mormon women seem more troubled by Donald Trump than the men I know or have observed.
It's certainly what we're seeing in Utah, too. Now Utah's not in play really on this, of course, but more than likely. That kind of leads to my next question a little bit, though, McKay. Support for Trump among Latter-day Saints is far, far softer than for most Republican presidential nominees. Do you think the Supreme Court vacancy and the nomination of Amy Coney Barrett and the prospect of the court revisiting or weakening Roe versus Wade will swing some of them back to Trump? In other words, give them a reason, though they may not be fans of, we like the outcomes. We're very interested in this. Yeah. What kind of play might that have?
I mean, that's been the case that the Trump campaign has made throughout this election season. The when they're courting religious conservatives in general, but specifically Mormons. And I've talked to Trump campaign officials who say, you know, I remember having one conversation earlier this year with somebody in Arizona who said, yeah, the Mormon voters, the conservative Mormon voters are a lot harder to mobilize than they have been in past election seasons for Donald Trump. And so that's something they've been working on. I do think the Supreme Court and the judiciary in general has been one of the chief selling points for Mormons who don't like Donald Trump, but were willing to hold their nose in 2016, might be willing to do so again in 2020. I wonder, though, about Amy Coney Barrett, how that will play, because the reality is, I should bite my tongue and not make a prediction, but it seems like she's going to be confirmed. She has the inside track to be confirmed before Election Day, which means that there's not this kind of vacancy that's sitting there to entice conservative voters, right? In 2016, you had Scalia's seat, which opened up in 2016, and famously Republicans in the Senate refused to fill it. And so there was this question of whoever wins this election will swing the Supreme Court one way or the other. Whereas in 2020, if Amy Coney Barrett is confirmed, you basically have a conservative majority in the Supreme Court for the foreseeable future, probably for a generation, unless there's some kind of court expansion or court packing that happens, which we don't have to go all the way into that. And Joe Biden has kind of dodged that question. But I think it's an open question whether that's actually conceivable, whether he could get the votes to do that. But I'm not sure that Amy Coney Barrett, if she's confirmed, will actually help win those voters over. If anything, they might feel like, okay, we got what we wanted out of Donald Trump, and now I don't have to vote for this guy that I just don't like.
It's almost like politically you're saying that, at least in some kind of weird warp sense, maybe that politically it might be better not to name somebody in some respects, at least to get that. Now, of course, court vacancies can happen. There can be a sudden death retirement or things like that. But right. I mean, that's kind of what.
And not just in the Supreme Court, but throughout the judiciary. Right. One of the things that Donald Trump and Republicans have delivered in their campaign promise has been that, flooding the judiciary with conservative judges. There have been hundreds of conservative judges seated during the Trump era. So, yeah, if your belief is that the future of American politics is going to be won or lost in the judiciary, and you're a diehard conservative, you might end up just kind of deciding that it's worth it. My colleague Emma Green, who's a religion reporter at The Atlantic, had a good piece about this earlier this week, where she interviewed a bunch of conservatives who are kind of Trump skeptical, and they don't like Trump. They don't like what he's kind of what his brand of politics has wrought. One of the quotes that she got from somebody was, the cake is already baked. At least we get a judge out of it. Which is kind of crass, but it sort of is the, it's like a real politic description of the situation for a lot of people in terms of how they see what's going on.
So what do you think are the most urgent issues to Latter-day Saints? I mean, we've written about this. Abortion is not the same issue to Latter-day Saints as it is to Catholics or to evangelical mm-hmm. Christians. It just isn't. Yep. I mean, obviously, most members would describe themselves as pro-life, but they don't seem to want to go to the mat on abortion in the same way that others. So what do you think are the major issues in this?
Well, you're right about abortion. They also, I mean, it is worth noting that the church's position on abortion is somewhat more moderate than, the most kind of purely pro-life position, right? The church makes exceptions for life and health of the mother, rape, incest. There are exceptions there that a lot of pure pro-life conservatives would not carve out, right? That kind of throws an interesting wrinkle into the way that Latter-day Saints view abortion. I think that when you talk to members of the church about what their top issues are, you get a lot of the same answers you get from kind of voters at large, you know, things like economic issues and, you know, various domestic issues like that. One of the things that I think Mormons probably disproportionately care about is religious freedom, which is kind of a term that can take a lot of different definitions depending on who's using it and how. But broadly speaking, they will cite religious freedom as a core issue for them. And when you dig into it, what does that actually mean? You know, I think that people who are really well versed in the issues will say, well, you know, we worry about BYU losing accreditation because of its policy toward, you know, same-sex couples, or about the church losing its tax-exempt status because of its doctrine or its teachings on homosexuality. So, you know, there are issues like that. So religious freedom. Then beyond that, I think that some of the issues that help Democrats' case a little bit more are immigration and refugee relief. You know, it was only a few years ago that the church rolled out this big refugee relief program. And, you know, we were hearing talks in general conference about how their story is our story not that long ago. You know, there is this kind of innate Mormon sympathy for the refugee experience. I think that goes back to the church's own history and the stories that we hear in church and grew up hearing in primary. And you know, that story and that sympathy, you're just not seeing a lot of sympathy for it coming from the Trump administration, frankly, and Democrats have seized on that. But, you know, it's funny because I think that as with any voter group, there are these kind of hardened partisans on both sides who just regardless are going to stick with their team. And when you're talking about Latter-day Saints, the Republican group is a lot bigger than the Democratic group. I'll go back to this again. What's interesting to me is that there do seem to be more persuadables, that's the, you know, political science term, in among Mormons than most other religious groups in 2020. And the question that I have going forward is whether that's a fluke of the Trump era because Donald Trump is so singularly offensive to a lot of Mormon sensibilities, or if it's a sign of a long-term realignment that could be happening in Mormon politics. And that's something that I'm going to be following pretty closely in the years to come. I'm sure you will too, because it, you know, Mormons until very recently were seen as the most reliable Republican voters among religious groups. You know, the GOP took them completely for granted. It was just understood that Mormon voters were not only going to vote Republican, but that they'd show up to volunteer for the campaigns. They would canvass. Republican strategists used to tell me about how Mormons were the best at door knocking because of their missionary experience. And they'd, you know, show up at voters' doors and make the pitch for George Bush or John McCain or Mitt Romney or whoever. You know, that is not happening at anywhere near the same level that it used to in the Trump era. And my question is whether we reach a situation as kind of the next generation comes of age where you actually have much more of a split in among Latter-day Saints in America in terms of their politics. And does it, you know, I've always been of the opinion that that could actually be really good for the church and for Mormonism, because if you're not seen as a reliable voting bloc that a party can just take for granted, and you have candidates of both parties feeling like they have to win your vote and earn your vote, you have a lot more leverage in American life. And so I think that could be a really interesting development in Mormon politics going forward.
Yeah, McKay, I was going to ask you that a little later, but I wanted to build on that just a little bit more, because the surveys have shown that younger Latter-day Saints definitely are more politically diverse, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. How long do you think before that kind of shift could happen? I mean, do you see it happening in the next 5 years, 10 years, 20 years?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, part of this is just like natural displacement of voters. So, you know, not to be crass here, but much older Latter-day Saints will eventually pass away, right? And those tend to be more conservative. The rising generation tends to be much more diverse politically, much less, at the very least, much less loyal to the Republican Party. You know, you see much greater numbers of independents and people who don't associate themselves with either party. So it could be the kind of thing where if the trajectory continues, it becomes more and more pronounced every election cycle. So in 2024, Latter-day Saint voters, you could see becoming more kind of split, and then 28, and then 32, and you know that basically every presidential cycle the diversity within Mormonism is more obvious. But again, a lot of this will depend on kind of what path the two parties take in the post-Trump era, right? Is the Republican Party fully Trumpified? Is this kind of now the way that the party is going to position itself on issues, the kind of candidates it's going to put forward? And on the flip side, is the Democratic Party going to make room and continue with efforts to reach out to voters of faith who may have been conservative pretty recently, or do they feel like they don't need to, in a secularizing country, spend a lot of time wooing Mormon voters? You know, so there's a lot of questions that get at much larger trends in American politics. But I do think this is a story that could get actually even more interesting after Donald Trump leaves office, because we'll start to see whether this was, kind of a mirage that was created by all the strangeness of Donald Trump, or if this is actually something real that we're going to see play out for a long time.
Yeah. Let me return, McKay, to the most famous Latter-day Saint politician right now, Mitt Romney. How do you think his persistent criticisms of Trump are being viewed by church members?
Yeah, it's a good question. I know that certainly the like ardently pro-Trump Latter-day Saints have fully turned on Mitt Romney. And, you know, I've interviewed some of them. I've talked to some of them. This goes from kind of rank and file just voters to, you know, Republican strategists and donors. Some of them are just completely outraged at Mitt Romney's kind of disloyalty to Trump. But I think for a lot more, some certainly have cheered it on. Never Trump, Mormon Republicans, Democrats have openly welcomed it. But then I think for a lot more, it's created kind of a discomfort with Trump, right? So I think that there are Mormon voters who would be inclined to kind of, just close their eyes and pull the lever for Trump and never think about it again or ever talk about it again, right? They're just because of all their partisan loyalty and where they are ideologically, they would just kind of drift that way. But Mitt Romney makes it so hard for them, because a lot of these people, you know, loved Mitt Romney in 2012, and they love that he's the United States Senator from Utah. And it's not as if Mitt Romney just kind of one time has voiced his opposition to Trump and then kind of stayed quiet. He's constantly reminding them of Donald Trump's moral failures, of his, vulgarity, of his incivility, of all the damage that he's done to our political culture in America. You know, just this week, he put out a statement that in really harsh language kind of criticized the way that Donald Trump has handled this election, the things that he said, while also criticizing some Democrats. So I thought it was interesting in that statement, Mitt Romney made the point of saying that, you know, Joe Biden has not sunk to the same levels as Donald Trump and some others in Joe Biden's party. So anyway, all of that is to say that I think Mitt Romney, I don't think he's the driving force in Mormon ambivalence about Trump, but I do think that he has kind of continued that momentum, because he makes it, because everything he says becomes news in kind of the Mormon sphere, right? It gets covered in their media. It's on social media. It's on Facebook. It's on Twitter and Instagram and stuff. And I just think that those constant criticisms and pronouncements about Trump carry a lot of weight with Mormon voters, even more so than, you know, Jeff Flakes did before him. You know, I always think about this as like Mitt Romney, like took the Mormon baton of Trump, Republican Trump criticism from Jeff Flake, and has just kind of continued it. And Jeff Flake, I think, was respected by a lot of Mormons, and he was a very conservative guy, but he didn't have the same stature, right? Mitt Romney was the 2012 Republican standard bearer. He's the first Latter-day Saint to become a major party presidential nominee. He does matter to a lot of Mormon voters, and his criticism matters.
So then you've got the other senator from Utah, also LDS, Mike Lee. Mm-hmm. What does that do? I mean, how does that play in Washington? You got these two LDS senators from Utah who are, seem kind of diametrically opposed. I mean, both are Republicans. Mm-hmm. There's no Dems in there.
Yeah. But they're about as far apart on Trump as you could be. I mean, I guess the thing about Mike Lee is that he's followed the more traditional trajectory, right? That he's gone from the kind of general discomfort that a lot of Republicans showed toward Trump in 2016. Mike Lee actually lasted longer than a lot of his colleagues. He never did endorse Trump in 2016, didn't vote for him. But, you know, throughout the Trump presidency, there's just been this gravitational pull of, you know, kind of pulling Mike Lee and a lot of other Republicans toward him. And for Lee, it was, you know, what he says, it was the efforts from the White House to pass his criminal justice reform bill that Mike Lee had been trying to push through. And when that got passed, he basically said, I'm voting for him. And now it's funny because when that happened, it seemed like Lee was kind of, you know, grudgingly getting on board, almost like, look, I appreciate the help I got, so I'm going to vote for him. But now he's full on, you know, a MAGA guy. You know, he is crusading for Trump. I think a really interesting story in just the last few weeks has been kind of crusading on Facebook and Twitter against church-owned media properties, KSL and Deseret News, for being effectively insufficiently pro-Trump, I think, you know, or conservative, which has been a really interesting development. And so, I don't know what the relationship is between Mike Lee and Mitt Romney. When you talk to, like, their aides, they, of course, will all say, oh, they're on great terms. They, you know, they disagree on some things, but they get along great. I would love to dig into that more. Maybe that's a story for after the election that I look into. But I've always wondered kind of what their relationship is. But yeah, I mean, Mike Lee, I think one thing I will say is that in the Trump era, they've taken very different courses or very different paths in terms of wielding power. Right. So Mike Lee, by taking the inside track and basically becoming a vocal Trump supporter, he has some influence with the White House. And he likes to point out to his constituents in Utah that, like, you know, look, I'm cozy with the president and his allies in the White House. And that's how I can help you. Right. Mitt Romney, on the other hand, by distancing himself from Trump and by kind of positioning himself as a swing vote, one of the very few Republicans who Democrats feel like they can work with in good faith, he's at the center of a lot of major legislative issues at any given moment, right? I mean, he was one of the first people to float the idea of stimulus checks at the beginning of the pandemic. And that ended up becoming a policy, right? His office is constantly putting out announcements of new bipartisan legislation that he's partnering with one Democratic senator or another to work on. So, you know, he also has a lot of influence in a completely different way. And so it is kind of an interesting study in contrast in terms of how a lawmaker can represent their constituents and sort of gain access to power on behalf of their constituents.
So do you think there'll be any Latter-day Saints, should Joe Biden win the presidency, do you think there'll be any Latter-day Saints appointed in that administration? Do you see any high-ups?
I have no idea. It's totally possible. I'll pass along some complete speculation that I've heard from people in Washington that I have no reporting to suggest this is true, not talk to Mitt Romney about it or, you know, anyone in Joe Biden's camp about it. But there is some speculation that a Mitt Romney could end up in a Biden administration, specifically because Biden has, you know, taken this you know, kind of grand coalition approach to politics, saying that he wants to work with both sides and bring reunify the country. I don't know how that would actually work, because I think Mitt Romney and Joe Biden are pretty on pretty opposite ends of most issues. The one thing that I've heard speculated is it would be some kind of foreign policy role, you know, State Department, you know, Secretary of State or Ambassador to the UN or something like that. Again, this is literally like the Washington parlor game of just kind of coming up with who would it be fun to see in what job. So I'm not reporting that this is actually a possibility, but it is fun to talk about or think about.
I mean, there are names that could, they don't necessarily have to be Democrats, although there certainly are Democratic Latter-day Saints in influential positions. Sure. But, you know, you have the John Huntsmans of the world also. Yep. and people like that. Yes. Well, McKay Coppins, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for having me.
And I guess we'll find out maybe at some point next month who wins this election and what happens. So fingers crossed. Yeah. Stay safe, McKay.
Hey, thanks. You guys too.
And thanks to Peggy Fletcher Stack.
Always a pleasure.
And to our producer, Chris Samuels. We remind our listeners that they can keep up on all the happenings in and about the church by subscribing to our free weekly newsletter. Just go to sltrib.com to sign up, and we'll talk again next time on Mormonland.